This is PCJ Radio. Media Network Plus, produced and presented by Paulette McQuarrie and Keith Perrell.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the program. Coming up on today's show,
an in-depth look on the decline of press freedoms in post-Soviet and post-Orange Ukraine.
And then we're going to take a look at the lighter side of broadcasting with boopers and moopers and poopers. Anything that can go wrong in a studio or live broadcast, and usually does. So stay tuned. Well, for this Year of the End edition of Media Network Plus, we're not going to be bringing you some of the latest developments that have been going on in the media. We'll save that for next month's edition. But instead, we have an absolutely fascinating story from you, Paulette, which is very interesting, in fact.
Yes, Keith. I've recently had the good fortune to speak with a fellow named Viktor Kovalenko in Ukraine. Viktor is a PR consultant and a former journalist during the Orange Revolution in Ukraine 6 years ago. He shares some interesting insights about press freedoms in Ukraine in the past 6 years under the watch of the hero of the Orange Revolution, former President Viktor Yushchenko, and more recently under the anti-hero of the revolution, current President Viktor Yanukovych.
Говорить Київ, столиця України.
Говорить Київ. 18 година 10 хвилин.
This is Radio Ukraine International. In this broadcast, you will hear Ukraine Today, a program of news, interviews, and reports.
Recent reports indicate that since the end of February 2010, press freedoms in Ukraine have deteriorated dramatically. In June of this year, International Media Watchdog Organization's Article 19 and International Media Support, or IMS, circulated a press release outlining the backward slide under Viktor Yanukovych, the current president of Ukraine. Yanukovych was the loser of the Orange Revolution, which 6 years ago captured the world's imagination and fueled the hopes of democratically minded Ukrainians the world over. But today, media watchdogs are alarmed at the deteriorating situation under the hand of the Orange Revolution's nemesis. In the immediate aftermath of the Orange Revolution, Ukrainian journalists enjoyed unprecedented press freedoms under then-President Viktor Yushchenko. It appeared that Ukraine was well on its way to becoming a poster child for democracy in the post-Soviet world. But however much Yushchenko understood the value of press freedom, most of his political colleagues did not. While it's understandable that corrupt politicians and oligarchs would not understand the value of press freedom, many who should have understood it did not. So while the focus is on Yanukovych today, the decline in press freedoms in Ukraine actually began long before February of this year, when Yanukovych was inaugurated as Ukraine's new president. Viktor Kovalenko, a public relations consultant and former journalist during the Orange Revolution, explains.
I can say that Viktor Yushchenko really granted the freedom of press, but the problem was, and now is, that majority of journalists here in Ukraine were not ready to continue to develop this, develop trade unions and associations, and they simply did not accept press freedom seriously. It was like, okay, now we have freedom, press freedom and a good president, so we can relax. And this relaxed attitude resulted in postponing the creation of public TV and radio. So journalists somehow stepped back after the Orange Revolution and hesitated to push President Yushchenko and even Prime Minister Tymoshenko to set up public broadcasting. That was a kind of mistake by Ukrainian journalists, as I see, to stop fighting for professional freedom further. Additionally, journalists actually do not fully see these strategic directions they could go. That's why now, when Yanukovych and his team gained power, the majority of local journalists were shocked, and me too. Now we are seeing censorship under Yanukovych rule again, and media personnel suddenly realized that freedom of press is too fragile, that the country has a critical lack of truly independent media, journalism is not actually protected, and access to public information is highly restricted. So journalists realized that all was fine in the past 5 years, mainly because of the goodwill of the good President Yushchenko. After Orange Revolution, Yushchenko stopped any orders, and I can tell you that during his term, he didn't send any orders to journalists about what to do and how to cover his activities. And that's why journalists felt that they can criticize Yushchenko openly, and sometimes they criticized Yushchenko more than enough, because they started criticize him not because of his wrongdoings or statements. He criticized his ideology and tried to play political role more than be watchdogs.
In the years after the Orange Revolution, press censorship in Ukraine gradually reemerged. But in less than a year under Yanukovych, it has escalated rapidly. Today, Ukraine's media environment now closely resembles that of the Kuchma era prior to the Orange Revolution. Ukraine is again experiencing the banning of critical reports about the government, curtailing of editorial control, and the issuing of specific instructions to include or remove certain political issues. Unlike under Kuchma, however, these press freedom violations are more subtle, at least to outside eyes. Viktor Kovalenko describes the situation.
Some PR persons from Kuchma's presidential administration, they decided to send out special orders to television companies and news services. It was hidden email orders without signatures. And in these orders, PR guys ordered to journalists that only positive news about Kuchma's administration and the present government should be broadcasted.
Oh, there was a word for that.
It was Temniki. I was a journalist on Novi TV when we received one of the first Temnik. And I asked my editor to show me this, and it was the printed email without signature and sent from public email. But everybody knew that time that this is serious. This is not some kind of joke, because our owner was very serious about this.
So do you see now, do you anticipate there might be Temniki coming from Yanukovych?
No, we have no Temniki from Yanukovych, but I imagine that some persons can call to owners and have very secret conversations and communications with the owners without letting journalists know about these activities, because they had experience in 2002. So now the technologies of ruling media became more sophisticated. They can control media owners and get the same result. This is difficult because without any proofs of censorship, it is hard for journalists to protect their rights and to show the society that they have problems.
According to several sources, including Reporters Without Borders, physical attacks and harassment of journalists and media representatives have been increasing significantly in Ukraine. Generally, police ignore these incidents or treat them with contempt. This may or may not be because in many cases the culprits are, whether overtly or covertly, government officials. On March 23rd, Vasyl Demyanyev, editor-in-chief of the newspaper Kolomeyskiy Vestnik, was attacked and severely beaten by unknown assailants. On April 8th, journalist Serhiy Andrushko of television station STB was questioning the head of the city of Kyiv's main housing department, Volodymyr Storozhenko. At one point, Storozhenko grabbed Andrushko's microphone and threw it in a garbage can. That same day, also in Kyiv, Serhiy Kuzrikov of the TV station Novy Kanal, or New Channel, was covering the inauguration of an exhibition at the House of Ukraine. As he was filming an argument between a reporter and the organizers, he was expelled by members of a Berkut Police Special Forces unit. On April 12th, Boris Braginsky, a journalist of Nine Telekanal in the eastern city of Dnipropetrovsk, was attacked by an unidentified man near the TV station's building at around 7:30 p.m. He was hit in the face, thrown to the ground, and kicked repeatedly. The assailant, who appeared to have been waiting for Braginsky, made off without taking anything from him. On June 15th, Serhiy Andrushkov television station STB had another run-in with government officials in Kyiv. This time, he was assaulted by one of the president's bodyguards at the Agro 2010 exhibition. On September 17th, journalist Artyom Fermenyuk was severely beaten by police in Donetsk in eastern Ukraine. 5 days earlier, the head of the local union of professional journalists, Hennady Berezovsky, was also assaulted. None of the assailants in these cases, and many others not mentioned, have been brought to justice. Even more alarming are reports of disappearing journalists. On August 11th, a Ukrainian investigative journalist based in Kharkiv went missing and is now presumed dead. Vasil Klementyev was known for his investigations of corruption in the Kharkiv area. His disappearance has been compared to that of Georgi Gongadze, an internet journalist murdered in 2000 for investigating corruption. Not surprisingly, these events have led to protests by journalists.
We have already significant journalistic protests against editorial censorship. In news departments of popular OnePlus1 and STB television channels, 3 or 4 months ago, journalists accused editors that they suspiciously selective in topics and execute hidden orders from the owners, which are dependent from the new state authority. But journalists lost with these protests because they do not know how to effectively protect their interests. And our journalistic trade unions and associations are small, fragmented, and they do not have enough finances to give quality protection by lawyers. Moreover, journalists in Ukraine are very dependent now on the media owners, especially in this financial crisis and due to the high unemployment rate in Ukraine. This motivation can play an important role, and many journalists will think many times before going to the protest because they need to eat something.
In a country that borders on a police state, the actions of most journalists in Ukraine are ruled by their survival instincts. Also, journalists are well aware that they are largely alone in their fight and that there's little or no assistance they can rely on from the outside.
During the past 20 years, no significant international media houses came to Ukraine to show good standards in action, to motivate local media and the development of journalism. The exception was with Ronald Lauder's Central European Media Enterprises. CME owned the popular national TV channel OnePlus1, but sold it in 2008 to one of Ukraine's billionaires. There were several small experiments with tabloids by some European media houses, but all of those projects were closed 2 years ago due to the global financial crisis. Ukraine urgently needs this Western experience, and unfortunately, European and American media houses didn't come to Ukraine. They came to Russia, they came to Eastern Europe, they came to Baltic countries even, but not to Ukraine. I cannot explain this because maybe our legislation is not so prepared for foreigners, and maybe this is the main obstacle.
This past summer, proceedings were initiated to strip two independent TV stations of their broadcast licenses. These stations are TVI and 5 Canal, or Channel 5. The two stations happen to be the ones most critical of the government. The main beneficiary of this move would be Valery Khoroshovsky, who owns a large media empire, Intermedia Group, and incidentally is also head of the SBU, Ukraine's main security agency. Reporters Without Borders has accused Khoroshovsky of a conflict of interest and has voiced other concerns about this case. With this strong-armed approach to media consolidation, Ukrainians are turning their hopes to public broadcasting.
The current presidential administration has promised to create public TV and radio instead of a state broadcasting company, and is making some steps toward this. And let's see if it will be successful, or will this be just a change in the title of the media. We have one goal, and I am, as a former journalist, I really want Ukraine to have public TV and radio, because we actually need this. In our post-communistic society, in this transitional society, we urgently should have an independent voice. And this voice should be reachable in every corner of the country. It can help to develop democracy and freedoms. And I think Yanukovych is trying to be good president, and he stated that he wants to do this. Let's give them chance. He promised. Let's see.
A hopeful optimism, but in February, Media Watchdog's Article 19 and IMS urged the newly inaugurated president to respond immediately to serious shortcomings within the legislative and policy framework related to freedom of expression and press freedom in Ukraine. Instead, on April 2nd, President Yanukovych dissolved the National Commission on the Reinforcement of Freedom of Speech and Information Development. This commission consisted of Ukrainian media experts tasked with advising the president, overseeing compliance with European and international media standards, and facilitating the launch of public service broadcasting in Ukraine. So, with such a setback, it is quite amazing that Ukrainians nonetheless remain hopeful of a future with a public broadcasting service. Truly a disappointing scenario for press freedom and indeed for democracy in today's Ukraine. For 2010, Reporters Without Borders has ranked Ukraine at 131 in its ranking of press freedoms around the world, and that's where it was in 2003, a year before the Orange Revolution, and in 2004, during the Orange Revolution, it was at 139. This year, at 131st place, Ukraine is just ahead of Russia, which ranked at 140th, but far below Poland, which was in 32nd place. The highest Ukraine has reached since 2002 in Reporters Without Borders rankings was 87, and that was in 2008 under Viktor Yushchenko. We'll be keeping an eye on things in Ukraine and hope that we'll be able to report on an improving situation in the near future.
Media Network Plus.
Now time for a song that I bet they won't play on the radio.
I bet you they won't play this song on the radio. I bet you they won't play this new song. It's not that it's awful or controversial, just that the f***ing words are awfully strong. You can't say on the radio or. You can't even say I'd like to you someday unless you're a doctor with a very large. So I bet you they won't play this song on the radio. I bet you they damn well program it. I bet you they're Ingol program directors who think it's a load of horse.
That was the one and only Eric Idle with a song called, well, you heard it right there, I Bet They Won't Play This Song on the Radio. Now, for this edition of Media Network Plus, Paulette, you know what I think we should do?
A what?
Okay, I have my script right here, and this is what I'm going to do. I am ripping it to shreds.
Ah, no. Oh, Keith, are you sure you want to do this?
I definitely want to do it. Now, I know that I have a little bit of fixlexia. Oh, sorry, I mean dyslexia. But I think we could manage today's show. Now, we have a lot of radio bloopers and some very funny stories about what was going on in radio, what goes behind the microphone, what's going on behind the microphones, as well as some unusual interviews, and we'll get to all that in this part of the show. Now, Paulette, as you know, New Year's Eve is just around the corner, and it's a time of year where people let off rockets and let off firecrackers. Now, where would you say are some of the more usual places that people do these things?
In the park or on the beach or somebody's backyard, maybe, stuff like that, like normal places?
Well, yes. But there's a word that you used right there, which perfectly sets up the next clip. You said back. Well, let's hear from our good friends at the BBC.
The news at 11 o'clock. This is John Marsh. Safety campaigners have repeated their warnings about the dangers of fireworks after a prankster tried to launch a powerful rocket from his backside. The 22-year-old man suffered serious internal injuries when the Black Cat Thunderbolt rocket ignited during the bonfire night stunt at Monk Wearmouth in Sunderland. Education officials in Pakistan got a surprise when they went to inspect a school near Hyderabad. Instead of classes of pupils, they found only chickens. The authorities say it appears to have been used as a poultry production centre for the last 12 years. That's the news. Not a moment before time.
We're going John, to have more. Stop it.
That is 12 o'clock.
You're killing us, John. Stop it, please. Well, no, go home now. You've done enough.
That's enough. Goodbye.
Now, Paulette, I don't know about you, but I really wonder, first of all, why this guy was letting off rockets from his backside.
Do you really want to know?
Oh, I really don't want to know. It's a good thing he wasn't eating beans or something. That could be really messy. Well, we just heard right there something that could go wrong during a live newscast. Now, Paulette, I don't know if you, when you watch TV or listen to radio, if you're, you know, if you're paying attention to the news, do you listen to see that, let's say, the news presenter makes a mistake? Do you pay attention to those things?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
As we say, I try not to. I'm in the business. I try to be forgiving, but it's kind of impossible.
Well, it's kind of impossible, but sometimes the strangest things happen, especially when you have a sort of not a too serious story followed by a real serious story, like in this next clip.
American historians have discovered what they think is the earliest recording of the human voice, made on a device which scratched sound waves onto paper blackened by smoke. It was made in 1860, 17 years before Thomas Edison first demonstrated the gramophone, and featured an excerpt from a French song, Au clair de la lune. The award-winning screenwriter Abby Mann has died at the age of 80. He won an Academy Award in 1961 for Judgment at Nuremberg. Abby Mann also won several Emmys, including one in 1973 for a film which featured a police detective called Kim Kutcher. The character on whom a long-running TV series was eventually based.
You don't know how many times, Paulette, I've heard newsreaders laughing after they're reading a story about somebody that's died.
Oh. Oh, not good. Not good.
But I kind of suspect that's probably what's going to happen to me one day.
I hope
somebody
not.
Somebody's going to say, he died! As I was preparing the show, looking for the clips and everything, somebody said, you know, how far do radio bloopers go back? I would probably have to say they probably go back to the days of Marconi.
Probably.
They probably do go back before. You know, could you imagine somebody sitting there, let's say, in biblical times, it is Christmas, writing a scroll, and then putting typos in it. You know?
Okay. That's a bit of a stretch, but I suppose.
Oh, I know we're being very silly, but it is the time of the year to be jolly. Here's one from probably, I think, the 1950s from ABC Radio. There was no date that was sent with this clip. It's of a show called Headline Edition with Taylor Grant. Now, Paulette, you record the show, right?
Right.
I mean, Nash Holos.
Yes.
Have you ever done the show live?
No.
Have you ever done live radio?
Rarely.
Now, we're kind of lucky to be able to record the show because, you know, if something goes wrong, we stop and we do it again, right?
Indeed. That's why I like it that way.
But imagine what would happen in a situation where you're doing a live newscast and none of the live reports are coming in.
Oh, God. Every announcer's nightmare.
Exactly. Especially for Taylor Grant.
The American Broadcasting Company presents Headline Edition with Taylor Grant.
In Washington, General Bradley's speech today was one of several interesting news developments dealing with our military defenses. Here's a summary by Gunner Back. We seem to be unable to contact Washington at this time. Let's try once again. Our cue to Washington is here is a summary by Gunner Back. Sorry, we seem to be unable, for some inexplicable reason, to contact correspondent Gunner Back in Washington, even as we have contacted him every night for the past 8 years. Well, the speech by General Bradley, as you may have heard, was before the Women's National Press Club, and it was one in which he told the assembled ladies that the United States must spend heavily on military readiness as far into the future as we can see at this time. Now then, to the nation's sports fans, the biggest news in quite a while is building tonight in Chicago, where world heavyweight champion Rocky Marciano is about to meet that challenge from ex-champ Jersey Joe Walcott. We sent correspondent Tom Casey to the weighing-in ceremonies today, and he recorded this report at that dramatic scene. Well, Mother told me there would be days like this. Shall we try once again for Chicago? Calling Tom Casey in Chicago. Our cue is this report at that dramatic scene. Some nights you can't make $1,000. Unfortunately, we had been told earlier today that Tom Casey had recorded a very fascinating report at the weighing-in ceremonies in which he had the voices of both Joe Wolcott and Rocky Marciano. Don't know how the betting is going right at the moment. Don't know as we should report it if we did know. Matter of fact, haven't a piece of copy about the fight tonight, except that we know it's going to be a very interesting one and exciting one, just as it was the last time they met. The weigh-in ceremonies took place at the Chicago Stadium, and that's where correspondent Casey had prepared for us that excellent report, which you and I have been unable to hear at this time. Let's see what else we have in the news to talk about this evening on a memorable headline edition, at least to me. Suppose we come back to you in just a moment or two. On this cue, I'll be back in a minute with more news.
Headline Edition is one of over 60 top ABC news shows brought to you each week by a distinguished staff of reporters, analysts, and commentators. ABC specializes in swift, accurate, and complete reporting of the latest happenings here and abroad. That kind of news coverage doesn't just happen. A trained newsman fills in the coloring that... A trained newsman fills in the coloring that brings the event to life, but it takes an experienced correspondent to know how that event fits the overall news pattern. For penetrating analyses, stay tuned throughout the day and night to ABC. Now here again is Taylor Grant and Headline Edition.
With portions transcribed, what portions? That's today's Headline Edition.
Taylor Grant with Headline Edition from ABC Radio. Paulette, let me ask you a question, because you record your show at home, the show that you do, Nash Holos.
Yes.
And right now you're sitting at your home in British Columbia.
Yes.
What are some of the things that you have to concern yourself with when you're recording?
Having all my music handy.
Mm-hmm.
Having, making sure everything's lined up, making sure my phone is turned off, making sure my husband in the other room isn't going to swear when I'm recording. Little things like that.
But has it ever happened that you're recording the show and let's say the telephone rings or your husband's doing some hammering and he hits his thumb?
Invariably.
with myself...
Hazard of business, Keith.
Exactly. The thing that I have to watch out for are my dogs.
Oh.
Yeah. And, you know, what's happened on a number of occasions is usually they're, for example, right now they're in the living room. But if they hear a dog outside, they start barking.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And the same thing can happen in radio studios, especially, let's say, after an announcer finishes doing what he has to do and he forgets to turn the mic off.
Ouch.
Or during a live news bulletin and the microphone turns on but there's nobody at it. It can pick up any recording.
92 to 95 FM.
And 1341 medium wave.
BBC Radio Ulster.
Well, we seem to have a technical problem going to the news, but we'll bring you the 11 o'clock news as soon as we can. You're listening to BBC Radio Ulster. Do not panic.
Girls were grabbed by a man in Scunthorpe. The teenagers, aged 13 and 15, were approached by a man on Sunday in the car park on Francis Street at around 9 o'clock. He let them go after they struggled and shouted out. He's described as white, around 5 feet 8 inches tall, with short dark hair. A £3 billion overspend at the Ministry of Defence is being condemned. Four big projects, including Typhoon Eurofighters and Astute Submarines, are being blamed for the majority of the budget crises. The MOD is already under the spotlight over the shortage of basic kit for frontline personnel. Tim Banfield from the National Audit Office says waste is unacceptable.
Track record hasn't been good. Looking at some of the...
So, Keith, you've done a lot of interviews in your day, and I've heard a lot of them, and I've done a lot of interviews, and most of them go well, but have you ever had one that didn't? Like, have you ever had somebody that was kind of hostile and not friendly at all?
I think in the 20 years that I've been in radio, there's only been one occasion that that happened. I had scheduled with, I don't remember his name, but it was an interview that we worked on for a couple of weeks. We had 15 minutes. The interview lasted, I'm kidding, not longer than 1 minute.
Oh,
we
no.
sat down. I hit record. I asked him the first question. He said, "I don't like that question," and he walked off. Never heard from him again or his people.
Oh, no. Well, I've had a similar, not very many, but one of my first interviews, it wasn't for radio, but I was very young and very unprepared, and I just had an opportunity. Somebody dragged me to and introduced me to a celebrity, and I had no idea what to ask, and so I just asked the most obvious questions, and this person was very, very, obviously very bored. And I every time they answered, I said, "Oh, is that right?" Trying to be, you know, sound enthusiastic and interested, although I was terrified. And so every answer that I got was, "Oh, is that right? Is that right?" And finally she said, "No, that's wrong." So finally I just said, "Okay, I'm sorry."
That's the only way we go.
That's all you can do.
Well, our next clip actually is from legendary Canadian broadcaster Barbara Frum, who was on television for many years. But before she made the transition from radio to television, she hosted a show for CBC Radio called As It Happens. This is an interview that she did in the 1970s with a woman by the name of Sandra Good. Sandra Good was a friend of Lynette Frome, who tried to assassinate U.S. President Gerald Ford. And this interview is just completely odd. Let's just put it that way.
I'm asking you as an event what you think of it, whether it was designed, if maybe she didn't put that gun in the chamber because she wanted to stage some guerrilla theater, or did she want to kill him?
You don't understand anything because you're not willing to understand. Best you be willing to open your minds and look at the roots of problems. Look at the problems that are besetting your world, your country.
Miss Good,
you duty.
Let's talk about killing for a minute. Okay?
Guy?
What about, you say...
Listen, woman, put me on to somebody else. I can't talk to you.
Why?
You're a very, very bad reporter. You're very bad. Put me on to somebody else. You are one of the worst.
Really?
Really are. You're very rude. You're very imperceptive. You're very ignorant. Your technique is just crude. You don't have any finesse. Now put me on to somebody else.
All right, I'll tell you what. Let me ask you one more thing.
No, put me on to somebody else. You're inadequate as a reporter.
I'm it, Miss Good. I'm it, I'm afraid.
Are you a man or a woman?
I'm a man.
Are you a man? You are a woman.
Well, then why did you ask?
Because you reflect a woman's fear.
I see. And you?
Your unwillingness to look at problems.
And you, what do you reflect?
I reflect a lot of children.
How old are you?
I reflect a lot of people with concern for the earth and the children.
Miss Good, children grow up to be men and women.
In your sense, in the robot computerized slave for the dollar sense, go to school and spend your life in the book sense, or living life sense, what are you talking about?
You say on behalf of children, and yet you talk on behalf of killing men.
I'm talking about people will be killed. People.
How about you, Miss Good?
Let me finish my question. Don't interrupt me again. When I talk about killing, I'm saying there will be a wave of assassins killing those who are killing the environment, the wildlife, the trees, selling.
Miss Good?
Products to the children and the people.
Miss Good?
For them. Don't interrupt me.
Miss Good?
Sandra Good. Miss Good is a friend of Lynette Frome, the would-be assassin of President Ford.
Sandra Good there, hanging up on Barbara Fum and asking if she's a man or a woman. There's actually a funny story, Paul, at how I got hold of that interview.
Oh.
At Radio Canada International, we had a tape floating around of these Barbara Fum clips, and that was actually one of the ones that was on it. The second one, when I first heard it, I don't think I stopped laughing for weeks on end, because Barbara Frum, this is the days, of course, when all the interviews on As It Happened were live, so you never knew what could happen. So they arranged to do an interview with a Welsh farmer who grew, listen to this, the largest cabbage in the world.
In the world.
In the world. Now, that's not so an unusual story. Well, maybe the cabbage part is, but what made the interview very strange was the fact that he had a problem with his hearing. He could barely hear any of her questions. He just keeps going, huh? So here's that interview.
How big is big in a cabbage?
It is 5 foot across the top, you know. And it is
5 foot?
Huh? 5 foot across from one leaf to the other, you know. Across the top, 5 feet wide.
So if you measure around the circumference.
No, straight across.
You mean if you cut it in half, it'd be 5 feet across?
Pardon?
If you cut it in half.
Aye.
Would it be 5 foot across?
Pardon?
Hello.
Hello?
If you stand up next to your cabbage, where does she come to on you?
Up to my breast.
No kidding. You could roll that down a hill and kill somebody.
Huh?
You could roll that cabbage down a hill and it would kill somebody.
When?
Have you cut it yet?
I dismantled it, anyway. I just leaves off it, you know. But there are plenty more of the same thing.
How did you dismantle it?
Pardon?
Mr. McLaughlin?
Hello?
How did you dismantle it?
I pulled the leaves off it and I cut it down in parts. There's a big heart in the center, you see. And the heart was about 30 pound weight or 40 pound weight, you know.
Mr. McLaughlin, what do you feed your cabbage?
Pardon?
What did you feed your cabbage?
I don't hear you, please. What did you say there?
Mr. McLaughlin, I haven't got the strength for you today. I'm sorry. Why don't we call you on Monday?
I'm even working Monday.
You're working Monday.
You ought to come over to see it.
What did you feed the goddamn cabbage? You didn't hear that either, I suppose. What? Did you feed the goddamn cabbage?
I'm sending you a picture of it.
I don't want a picture of it.
Yeah.
I just want to know what you fed it.
Pardon?
I want to know what you fed it.
Hey, I fed it?
Yes.
I'm trying to talk to it.
Say it again.
I talked to it in Gaelic.
I know you talked to it in Gaelic, but you must have fertilized it or something.
No. I just talked to it every day.
I hope the cabbage's hearing is better than yours.
Pardon?
I hope the cabbage's hearing is better than yours.
Do you understand the effect of it?
Why not? Sure. Mr. McLaughlin?
Hello?
Bye.
We now move on to a radio station where we don't hear too many bloopers from. Well, some people would say the news is bloopers enough, and that is the news from China Radio International. But there are bloopers that happen within CRI. Now, as many of you may or may not know, I worked at CRI for a number of years. One of my good friends there was an Australian guy by the name of John Kennedy. John, by the way, passed away in 2004 at the age of 34. But occasionally on weekends, I would have to produce his 5-minute news capsules that were distributed to different radio stations around China. Now, John's sense of humor was just as warped as mine, and sometimes the 5-minute news capsule would take 30 minutes to record. And what happened in those 30 minutes? Well, let's take a listen and find out.
Media and Communication, Competition Management and Game Service. The Commission then made no hesitation in ASP, requested that the North Korean vessel, the Cholsan, be detained in Ningbo port of Zhejiang.
Zhejiang.
A local maritime court in East China has released a North Korean cargo vessel that was detained during shoebox. On April 5th, a Singaporean shipping management company, ASP, requested that the North Korean vessel, the Cholsan, be detained in Ningbo port of Zhejiang province because the owner, the Korean Company, owed it money. The Chinese court has successfully persuaded the North Korean company to pay about $800,000 as required by the plaintiff, and the detained vessel a sea of Beijing's preparation work from the construction facilities and market exploitation to news briefings, transportation, and athletes, and services for athletes. Wang Wei says a large-scale activity will be held in Beijing soon to mark the release of the emblem for the two...
And there we go, for the first time ever, radio bloopers from the English language section of China Radio International from John Kennedy. And I would like to thank John's sister Simone, all the way down under in Australia, for sending those clips along. One of my favorite things, Paulette, when I talk to radio people, is to find out anecdotes, weird stories that go on behind the scenes. I don't know about you.
I love those. Those are my favorite. I live for those, Keith.
Well, there's two that we have here. From my good friend Bob Zanotti, who hosts Switzerland in Sound on PCJ, and the other from Stuart Parkins, also from China Radio International, who tells us the wonderful, well, a wonderful story about dealing with the censors at CRI.
Oh, censors. Okay, this is going to be fun.
Anyway, the story went something like this. This is how I read on the radio. Hi, everybody. Well, today is International Chicken Appreciation Day. Now, United Nations Chicken Appreciation Day. Everybody's heard of UN Women's Day, Children's Day, Environment Day, all these things. But for some reason, the UN International Chicken Appreciation Day has never quite hit the headlines. Anyway, we're going to remedy that today. And to commemorate this special occasion, we're going to have not one, but two egg dishes. And then I continued with the program. And later that afternoon, there were two very nice elderly women who were sort of original people on the English service, going back to the 1930s or something. And they used to sort of vet and listen to everything to make sure it was PC. And they stopped me in the corridor, and they said, "Oh, Mr. Bai, my trainee's name, Bai White, we listened to your program, and we've checked all everywhere we can, and we can't find any reference to the United Nations International Chicken Appreciation Day. Could you tell us something more?" And off the cuff, because I wasn't prepared for this, I said, "Oh, on this day in 1983, in order to promote the raising of chickens by peasant farmers in the Third World, the United Nations Food and Agricultural Organization in Rome, they started the International Chicken Appreciation Day. And every year it's been on, and that's what we celebrated today." "Oh, thank you so much. Yes, thank you." The next day, I'm walking down the corridor, and they were looking at me a little bit sort of frightened, and I said, "Oh, hello, by the way, yesterday, remember United Nations International Chicken Appreciation Day?" Yes, I said, "It doesn't exist." And, "Oh, I mean, they nearly died." "Oh, Mr. Parkins, we can't give our listeners incorrect information like that." Well, Keith, need I say more?
I can remember one of my first jobs at SRI back in the early 70s was to review some archive tapes. We used to go back to the archives sometimes and rebroadcast material. And we had an interview with Conan Doyle, you know, the Sherlock Holmes Conan Doyle. It was Adrian Conan Doyle, an interview with him done in the, the late 50s or early 60s or something. And I think he actually died. That's why I was asked to pick out a clip that we could play on the air. He had a house in the Bernese Oberland like so many of the English gentry did. And he had a lisp. Don't worry, I'm not going to be too graphic here. We could do it in Europe, but I think for a worldwide audience, especially being broadcast over an American station, I wouldn't do it. Anyway, he had the lisp. And he talked like this all the time. And he was talking about his father and what his father would do and his memories of his father in Switzerland. And he said the phrase, let me put it this way, the phrase he meant to say is he would come into the room, sit on the floor, and gaze into the fire. And I listened to the tape, and it came out as my father would come into the room, he would, on the floor, and gaze into the fire. I called Mike McMahon, the head of the service. I said, "Mike, you can't put this on the air." He said, "What's the matter?" He said, "Listen to this." He said, "Holy." I said, "Yeah, that's what I thought." "And you broadcast this already?" He says, "Yeah, nobody noticed."
And there was Bob Zanotti telling us about somebody doing something on the floor. He meant to say sitting, but apparently with his lisp, it sounded like something else. I'm not going to say the word. The only thing I will say is poo-poo.
Remember that word.
Yes, remember that word. It's a very important word. It's going to be the word of 2011. Now, for the past while, Paulette, you know, we've been listening to radio bloopers and hearing some funny stories. But let me ask you, do you think it's fair that we cover up our own mistakes?
Absolutely.
You think it is? Really? Are you sure you mean that? Because, guess what?
Okay, fair. What do you mean fair, Keith? Define fair.
This now is the third edition of Media Network Plus.
Yes.
And I've been keeping all the outtakes.
Oh, no.
Yes.
Oh, no.
So I really think that if we could look at, you know, the people that we've listened to in the past while and laugh at them, I think people should be able to laugh at us.
Oh, I suppose so.
Right. Okay, so here are some of the outtakes from Media Network. Blah, blah, blah. So here are the...
I could keep that one on.
Okay, so here are the outtakes from Media Networking. Media Networking. Why am I saying networking?
Ms. Gungadza received political asylum in the United States in 2001 following the murder of her husband, journalist Georgi Gungadza. I'm going to try that again. Ms. Gungadza received political asylum in the United...
I thought you were going to I thought you were going to say Godzilla, anyway.
Yeah, okay, don't put that in my head. Okay. Is this part of the act, or
no,
what?
No.
Am I going to do it again?
No. It's fine. I have my mind works in all different ways, so I sometimes when I hear things, I think there could be a comedy script in it.
Okay.
No, and it wasn't anything you said. It just anyway. Okay, let me take it up. Okay, my part. Okay, you see, this is what I mean. I'm very silly today. Mm. Three men from Chitoa village fell victim to the police raid earlier this week, and they have been able to identify the police details as Constable Simpupu. In a statement to Radio VOP confiscating the police... Okay, now I'm going completely mad.
That's funny.
Okay.
Your eyes are crossing. The two journalists were awarded the prize for their series Quit Choking on Me in the background there. It's not going to sound good. Let me try again.
A special thanks goes to Andy Sennett of the Media Network blog at Radio Netherlands Worldwide as the source for the material used. You can check them out at http://blogs.rnw.nl/Media Network.
Keith,
and if you didn't have
Keith,
time... Yes?
Keith, you said double dot, and I think you meant colon.
Colon!
HTTP.
Okay. I always say double dot.
People might think it's two dots, and that's not good. I mean, they'll probably know, but you got to be accurate.
Well, then they're stupid, and they shouldn't listen. Okay.
Only intelligent listeners that can read our minds are allowed to listen to
exactly.
Our
the rest of you can piss off. Okay. Let me do that again. Okay. Colon. Like my colon. Now I'm not going to be able to do it. Okay, here we go. I was speaking there with Richard Lewis, the author of Axis South. Lucas. I was speaking there with Richard. Pooh!
How long it was going to take.
Okay.
I'm running out of time here.
Okay, yeah. Okay. Okay. I was going to say, I was speaking there with Dickie Lucas.
He might not appreciate that.
Okay.
And with that, we have come to the end of this edition of the show. But before we go, we have a contest we want to tell you about.
That's right, and we're not giving away poo-poo or anything like that. But we do have two prizes. The second prize is a PCJ coffee mug and shortwave receiver going out to one person. And we also have two first prizes.
Yes, we do. We've two lucky winners. We'll get a copy each of Death of a Pirate by Adrian Johns, Mildred Gillers. Who is that, Gillers?
Yeah, Mildred Gillers. So take it up from
And we have two first prizes for two lucky winners. We'll get a copy each of Death of a Pirate by Adrian Johns, Mildred Gillers, the American voice of Nazi Germany, The Real Taiwan and the Dutch by Menno Goodhart, and a CD that features popular Taiwan music from the 1930s.
And all you have to do to enter is send us an email. Our email address is pcjmedia@gmail.com. That's pcjmedia@gmail.com. Or you can send us an entry via snail mail to PCJ Radio, Attention, Media Network Plus, 8th floor, number 47, Lane, L-A-N-E, 31, Section 1, Sanmin Road, and that is S-A, N like Norman, M like Mother, I like Ivan. Oh, I'm running out of air. N like Norman Road, and you know how to spell road. Taipei, Taiwan, ROC 22070. And if you didn't have time to write that down, don't worry. We'll have all the contact information at the Media Network Plus page at pcjmedia.com, and we'll be announcing the winners in next month, the first edition of Media Network Plus for 2011 in January.
In Vancouver, Canada, I'm Paulette Macquarie.
And in Taipei, Taiwan, I'm Keith Perron.
Wishing you all a very Merry Christmas.
And Happy New Year. Best 73s to you all.
Yes, yes, jolly good, jolly good, yes. We wish you a Merry Christmas. We wish you a Merry Christmas. We wish you a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. Good tidings we bring to you and your kin. Good tidings for Christmas and a Happy New Year. Oh, bring us some figgy pudding. Oh, bring us some figgy pudding. Oh, bring us some figgy pudding and a cup of good cheer. Good tidings we bring to you and your kin. Good tidings for Christmas and a Happy New Year. We won't go until we get some. We won't go until we get some. We won't go until we get some. So bring some out here. Good tidings we bring to you and your kin. Good tidings for Christmas and a Happy New Year. Yeah.